Morning. Today's Gemara in Bamitzia is Daf Yudalid. Thank you, Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf Daf, as well as Zichron Nishmas Libra, Gabriela Bashmuel. We are on the very top of Gimel Amud Beis, second line down. First line down, actually. We're starting today with the words Amar Rav Elazar. Amar Rav Elazar is going back on the Mishnah, and it's going to be commenting on the Mishnah that we saw back on Yud Beis Amud Beis. Quickly to review. The Mishnah back on Yud Beis Amud Beis discuss finding Shtari Chov. So the thing that you found is a note of indebtedness. Malvaro Tolova that I lent you money, and I expect the money back, and the names of the people were included in the Shtar Chov, including the date, and including the amount that was loaned. And you pick it up and you find it, and what do you do with it? So do you return it back to the Malva? So there are a number of considerations which we discussed over the course of yesterday's daf. A number of considerations. First of all, if the Malva, as we already pointed out yesterday, but it's important to reiterate, it's really the fundamental point of the Gemara. If the Malva is holding on to the document, so then there's no disputing the document. Meaning at that point in time, Lova could say whatever he wants. The Malva is holding on to the document. Document was signed by two witnesses, so there's nothing to dispute. There's simply nothing to say at this point. The Lova is going to have to pay the loan as long as the Malva is holding on to the note. The problem over here is that the Malva is not holding on to the loan, to the note. Somebody found it. And so now that the note is a lost article, so it really challenges the integrity of the note. And we have to take a number of things into consideration. One thing we take into consideration is that maybe the Lova paid back the note already. In other words, it could very well be that the Malva held the note against the Lova. The Lova said, fine, I'm going to pay it. The Lova then paid it. And then when the Lova got his hands on it, he lost it. That's one possibility. Another possibility to take into consideration is that the Lova will say, I don't know what you're talking about. In other words, lo hayadvar me'olam. The note never took place. You're not holding the note. Note was found somewhere. I'm claiming it's a forged document. Another thing to take into consideration, kanunya. Maybe the note's been paid up. Maybe during over the term of the loan, the Lova sold off a property that he wants back. In other words, he has seller's remorse on a property that he sold and he wants it back. And so now, what he'll do is he'll go back to the Malva and say to the Malva, look, let's do the following. Obviously, it's disingenuous. Obviously, it's, you know, it's a form of gzela, but I'll give you back your loan document, or I'll, quote-unquote, I'll lose the loan document, and then someone's going to give it back to you. You'll claim the loan against me. I'll simply default on the loan, and we'll get back the property that I sold, and we'll split it. So that's what's called kanunya. So maybe that's another consideration. So there is a lot to take into consideration of whether you return or you don't return it. So a lot of variables. Okay, I threw a lot out there. This is most of what we discussed over the course of yesterday's daf. And if you look back at the Mishnah brings down a machlokus between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. The shita of Rav Meir in the Mishnah, just to review back on Yud Beis Amud Beis. So Matzah Shari Chovim Yesh by Machrayes Nechasim Lo Yachzur Shebeisin Ephraim Mehem Ein Mehem Achrayes Nechasim Yachzur Shein Beisin Ephraim Mehem Div Rav Meir. So first is the opinion of Rav Meir, and Rav Meir says it depends. If the loan has Achrayes Nechasim, which means that the loan says that if there's a default of the loan, the land will be there to secure. Otherwise known, it's a mortgaged note. And there is a lien against the property of the Lova. So if it has that, so then you can't return it. Because if you were to return such a note, so then the Malva would use it in order to collect, and perhaps unlawfully. However, if there is no Shibun Chasim on the note, so then it can be returned. Okay, for reasons which we're gonna speak out in just a moment. And then, and the Chachamim are of the opinion that under no circumstances are you supposed to return the note back to the Malva, because the Malva may come and use this note and extract money from the Lova, and perhaps unlawfully. Okay, so that is the presentation of the Machlokas in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Now yesterday, we went through three opinions amongst the Amoraim in terms of touching up the Machlokas. We went through the opinions of Rav Asi, Abaye, and Shmuel in that order. Okay, for our purposes today, I'm just going to review the opinion of Shmuel, and then we're going to go on. Shmuel said, it's important to know all three, but for our purposes, just for today's daf, Shmuel said that in general, I'm not worried about kanunya. I'm not worried about any type of subterfuge that takes place between the Mav and the Lovim. That's not a concern of mine. Shmuel therefore says, in explaining the Mishnah, what is the explanation of the Mishnah? The Mishnah is talking in the context where the Lovim says, L'hayadvar me'olam. Right now, I don't know what he's talking about. This note never existed. I never borrowed money from him. He's out of his mind. And he's not the one holding the note right now. It was found by some sort of third party. And I don't know what he's talking about. So under those circumstances, so now we are concerned that the shtar is mezuyaf. It's a forged document. And so therefore we're not going to return it back to the malveh. So if that's true, so according to Shmuel, this is what we explained yesterday. So then what's the sheet of Rav Meir? Rav Meir says, well, if it doesn't have Sheba Nechasim, so then you can go ahead and you can return it back to the Mava. Why in the world would you do that? It could very well be a forged document. So, in explanation of Shmuel, what we said yesterday is that Shmuel's of the opinion, within Shitas Rabbi Meir, that if you have a loan document that doesn't have Sheba Nechasim, it is a useless document. The Mava cannot collect that document under any circumstance. And so therefore, even though you're handing it back to the Malva, what you are effectively handing back to the Malva is a piece of paper. And that's it. And then the Gemara asked the question, this was the comical part of yesterday, so if it's just a piece of paper, why are you handing it back to the Malva? So as the Gemara said yesterday, we're not going to hand it back to the Lova because the Lova says this loan never existed. So he's not even claiming the paper. He's saying that the paper never, it shouldn't be. It doesn't have any meaning to it. Now as far as the Malva is concerned, so the Gemara said yesterday, well, the Malva may need a cork stopper. And so his bottle of wine may go bad and he may need something to stuff the top of the bottle of the wine. So at least, in the very least, he's entitled to that piece of paper because he claims the paper. It's a worthless piece of paper, but he is claiming the paper. Okay. Someone asked me that question also after the daf yesterday.
I mean, you can't say it's nothing. His name is there.
If we were to call the Edom out, I don't mean call them out in the modern usage of that term. I mean in the literal sense, like call them back, like and ask them, you know, and they testify to the loan. So now we have what to talk about. But if we can't find the Edom and all we have is this piece of paper that's not being held by the lender. So then, still, right. And again, I'm just, I'm, I think your question is,
your name is on there.
I think your question is better than my answer. And I think your question is better than my answer because what if the Shai Mekuyam? So not only do you have two Aiden, but you also have a basin who then certified that the document, notarized the document, said it's good. Then it's even harder to imagine. Okay. I like your question better than my answer.
Why didn't they record these?
Right. So what?
It's easy instead of all this complexity.
Right. Right. In other words, if they had like a record system like we have, so then a lot of this would be avoided. But in other words, okay, fine. Again, that's it's a fair point. On Yud Gimel Amud Beis, we're on the very top of the Amud Amar Rebbe El Azar. Okay, so now here we are going to be introduced to more Amarayim on this topic of when the Mishnah says you found a lost document, return it or don't return it, yes or no. The Chachamim say no. Rav Meir says, well, it depends. With Sheba Nechasim, you will not return it. With no Sheba Nechasim, you will return it. And so yesterday's daf, we went through three opinions, Rav Asi, Abaye, and Shmuel. We chazed over the opinion of Shmuel, and you'll see why. You'll see why specifically chazed Shmuel's opinion. And now, in the Amarayim, we have two more opinions to go through. We're on the very top of the Amud on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. Amar Rabbi Elazar Machlok, Shein Chayv Moda. The whole debate in the Mishnah is when the Lova does not agree that the loan ever took place. So Rav Elazar says, now Rav Elazar basically is in line with Shmuel, meaning that his understanding of Rav Meir is that when you have a unsecured note document, so basically you can't use it to collect anything. Not for karka meshubad, not for a mortgage property, and not even for any cash that he has on hand. Rabbanan Savre and the Chachamim of the opinion, skip the parentheses, migbagabe migbagabe. No, you could still use it in order to collect. Avakashachayv moda, but when the Lova agrees that he actually owns, was, I'm sorry, yeah. I'm using the verb in the wrong way. When the lover agrees that he owes the money, so then you're going to return it to the malveh. And so therefore you're going to return it back to the malveh, and we're not worried. We're not worried that the loan was paid back already. We're not worried that there was any type of plot that was trying to be manipulation created by the malveh and the lover in order to get lands that were sold by the lover. We're not worried about any of that. This is Rav Elazar's understanding of the Mishnah. When the lover admits that the loan took place, you're going to return it back to the malveh, and everyone's in agreement to that. No, Rav Yochanan says the whole debate in the Mishnah is when the borrower agrees and admits that the loan took place. And according to Rav Meir, if it is a loan document that does not have Shiba Nechasim, so you will be able... you will be able to collect. Granted, you won't be able to collect from properties, but you'll be able to collect from any cash that he has on hand. His current properties. So, and the Chachamar Ravi have the opinion that even if the note seems to be unsecured, but the Chachamim say that no, any note would allow one to collect from mortgage properties. But if the lover does not agree to the loan, so then you shouldn't return it because we're worried about piron. You were worried about maybe, in fact, the loan was already paid back, and the loser of this document was not the malveh, but rather the lover. Okay, adkan. So once again now, more opinions amongst the Omarayim in terms of how to understand the Mishnah. With all this said, Tanya, Kavasi de Rav Yochanan, Vityufta de Rav Elazar Bechada, Vityufta de Shmuel Betarte. So the Gemara says, now I'm going to show you a Braisa, and this Braisa clearly operates with Rav Yochanan's understanding of our Mishnah. And, obviously, if it agrees with Rav Yochanan, obviously this Braisa that we're about to learn together is going to be disputing Rav Elazar's understanding of the Mishnah, and it's going to be disputing Shmuel's understanding of the Mishnah as well. Now, considering the fact that Rav Elazar and Shmuel are both agreeing basically to the same point, so we know that once the Bryce is against Rav Elazar, the Bryce is also going to be against Shmuel as well. But the Gemara points out, however, that it will dispute Shmuel not in one, but rather 2 points, and we'll see that together. Here's a Bryce. Matzah Sharichov. The Bryce starts off with exactly the same topic we're discussing, obviously, which is that you find a loan document, V'yeshbem Achreis Nechasim. And on the loan document, it actually is written that there is that the property is a mortgage against the loan. Afa pishishne modim, and even though both would agree that the loan took place, which means that the lova is an admission that the loan took place. So you cannot return it to either one of them. Ein b'machreis nechasim. However, if it's an unsecured note, bizman shalova modi achzalamave. So then, when the lova is an admission that the loan took place, so then you hand it back to the malveh. But if the lover does not admit the loan took place, so then you return it to neither. Divrei Meir, and all this is the opinion of Rav Meir. So basically, to put it succinctly, according to the Bryce's version of Rav Meir, when it's a secure note, when the note is clearly has on it that property is a mortgage against this loan, so then we do not return it, according to Rav Meir, under any circumstance. Even when the lover admits that the loan took place, we don't return it. And why don't we return it? So it certainly sounds like from the Braisa, the reason why we don't return it is because we're interested in protecting the lekuchos. Because once now it's a secure loan, and once property is a mortgage against this loan, so that means now that the malveh is going to go after, if he can't go after the loveh, so then he's going to go after the lekuchos. So you cannot return it back to the malveh. Shehayir Amer Omer Shtar Sheish Beishesh by Machares Echasim Govim Lechasim Meshubadim Shem by Machares Echasim Govim Lechasim Nechorim. Because, and the Bryce over here is super articulate. The Bryce says that Rameir says that if it's a secured loan, meaning it has written so on the contract itself that the property is a mortgage, so then you collect from the properties. And if it's an unsecured loan and there's no mention in the note document that the property is a mortgage, so then you don't collect from properties. Continuing now in the Braisa, that you always collect from properties, meaning regardless of whether the note has in it, in the contract itself, that properties are mortgaged, if it says it or even if it doesn't say it, properties are always going to be mortgaged. Meaning, once you have a loan document the loan document automatically creates a shibud against the property, with or without it articulated. So, in other words, it is a tacit understanding of every loan document that there is a mortgage against the property. So, Tiyufta de Rav Elazar Bechada Dama, I'm sorry, Tiyufta de Rav Elazar Bechada. Here, the Gemara is going to spell everything out. It's not like normally in the Gemara, lay out the Brisa, you're going to have to go back, you're going to review the opinion of Rav Elazar, you're going to review the opinion of Shmuel, and you're going to figure it all out. Here, the Gemara spells it all out. And it goes like this. So Tiyufta de Rav Elazar Bechada. So this Brisa clearly is in disagreement with Rav Elazar. Da'amar l'Rebbe Meir Shar Shein Bo Chayis Nechassim Enegovim Nechassim Eshudabadim V'lo Nechassim Enecharim V'kamar Bein L'Rab Meir Bein L'Rab Anel Cheshil L'Kanunya. So according to Rav Elazar, we're not worried about any type of scheming between Mav and Lova. Ubraisa Kitani Sharshim Bar Khaisa Khasim Mishabdu Dalogabe, Habem Nechon Mag Begabe, Victani Bain Lara Mayor, Bain Rabana Khashina Lakanunya, Dictani Afa Pisha Shem Modem Loyaksu Lola Zevalalaza. And meanwhile, according to the Braisa, we are clearly worried about scheming, because the Braisa says even if both Malva and Lova agree that the loan is in fact a correct loan, and that the Lova owes the money, we're not going to hand it back to the Malva, because we're worried about scheming that takes between Malva and Lova, and maybe they are trying to simply get back property that was sold by the Lova. So therefore, you do not return it back. So clearly, the Braisa argues with Rav Elazar. Now, I'm a cheshin lekenuyin. V'ha'hani tartihu. So the Gemara says, now, it's the Gemara over here is just an accounting question. We said that this Braisa is against Rav Elazar on one point. The truth of the matter is, it's really against Rav Elazar on two points, both on his understanding of Rav Meir and on his understanding of the Chachamim. So the Gemara says, Chatamhu. Yes, it manifests as two separate points, one on the top of Yudal Amad Aleph. It does manifest itself as two separate points, but in terms of what the principle is, it's based on one basic principle. Demishum Dekam Rav Elazar Machlokes B'Shein Chayv Modeh Hu Metaru Tzachi. It's because the according to Rav Elazar, the entire debate is when the Lova does not agree to the loan. But once the Lova agrees to the loan, according to Rav Elazar, so then you're going to return it back to the Malva. According to the Braisa, you're not going to be returning it to the Malva. So there's one principal debate between the Braisa and Rav Elazar's understanding of the Mishnah. Okay. Now, to Yufta de Shmuel Batarte. Now, as far as the Braisa is concerned, so it's against Shmuel on two points. Now, the first point is going to be repetitive because it's the same as Rav Elazar. So, Chad de Kereb Elazar, Da Amukim Asis Meshein Chayv Moda. So, as far as the first point, so he too, Shmuel, says that our Mishnah is talking about when the Lova is not admit, but when the Lova does admit that the loan is in fact a correct loan, so you're going to be returning the loan document back to the Malva. That is Shmuel's opinion. And the Braisa says, no, you won't. You will not be returning it back to the Malva because we're worried about Kanunya. So on that point, the Braisa is against Shmuel. V'charadam Shmuel matzah shah hakna b'shuk yachzir labalim v'lo cheshen lepiron. And another point is as follows. Shmuel says that if you find a document which is shtar hakna, we said this yesterday, let's say it again today. Shtar hakna in this context means that it's a loan document, and there's Sheba Nechasim in the document, and written in the document is the following clause. And that is that the borrower writes in the document, I am going to lien my properties against the loan right now. Even if I don't get the money right now, doesn't matter. I am forming a lien against my property, against the loan, right here, right now. That's what's called Shtar Hakna. So now, there is not going to be any gap between the dating of the document and the origination of the lien. They're both going to be occurring concurrently, even if the lender didn't lend the money immediately. Now remember, as we discussed this yesterday, how can that be? How can the lender not lend the money immediately? Because remember, we discussed yesterday where we can have the lover write up the loan document even without the lender being present, meaning he's in such desperate need of money. So basically he goes to his offer and he says, look, write up a loan document for me right now. and the and I'm committing myself to mortgaging my property from this very date that we write up the loan, which it has to be, because the scribe is not going to write any other date on the document. He can't predate the document. He can't postdate the document. So they're going to, and so the borrower says to the scribe, write up for the loan document for me now, and I will mortgage my property against the loan right now. And then as far as when the loan originates, so then he's going to find a lender, or the lender, because the lender's name is going to be written in the document, and he's going to then hand them the note, and it could happen a week from now, it can happen a month from now, it can happen 6 months from now. And as far as the lien is concerned, since that clause was written in the document, the lien begins right away. So, Shmuel's of the opinion, Motzei Shtar Hakna B'Shuk Yachzer L'Balim V'lo Chayshin L'Piron. So you hand it back to the owner, and owner meaning the malve, and we're not worried that the loan was paid back. So you have to diktani hachiaf apishes shnei modem layachzer lo lazeh v'lo lazeh. I'm a chayshin lepiron. V'kol shekein hacha delo mod love chayshin lepiron. And so on the point of the brisa says that we are worried about the loan being paid back, and so, and that's why if I find a loan document, I'm not going to be handing it back neither to the lender nor to the borrower. So, on two fronts, this brisa is problematic for Shmuel, and so Shmuel is not worried about Kanunya. The brisa says we are worried about Kanunya. Shmuel says we're not worried about Piron. The brisa says we are worried about Piron. So the two concerns that Shmuel says not to be concerned about, the brisa says no, let's be concerned about that. So on two fronts, the brisa is against Shmuel. Amr Shmuel, my time at the Rabbanan. Okay, we're continuing now in the Gemara. One Yudal Amad Aleph. So now, after having given over, now when all said and done, right? Just as a quick recap, five Amoraim's opinions in terms of the Mishnah: Rav Asi Abaye, Shmuel, Rav Elazar, Rav Yochanan. Okay, that's a lot to review tonight. Okay, you got to free up your evening for tonight. So there are five opinions amongst the Amoraim in terms of the Mishnah, the extent of the Mishnah. But the Gemara does seem, however, to have concluded on this matter in that the Braisa seems to be supportive of Rav Yochanan's Pshat in the Braisa. And I should say better, Rav Yochanan's Pshat in the Mishnah, that we are concerned about scheming between the Malva and the Lova. We are concerned about the Lova having paid back the loan. And so for these concerns, if I find a loan document, according to the Chachamim, I will never return it back to the lender, because we don't know if, in fact, the lender is owed this money. Okay, that really is a summary of everything we did since the Mishnah on Yud Beis Amud Beis. The Gemara now continues with the statement of Shmuel, Amar Shmuel, my time of the Rabbanan. What's the reason behind the Chachamim? Now, let's remind ourselves. According to the Chachamim, you have a note document. You find a loan document in the street. And the Chachamim say whether it is Hashiba Nechasim, in other words, there's an explicit clause in the document that says that properties will be mortgaged against the loan, or whether there's no Shiba Nechasim, meaning there's no such clause, in either event, you cannot return it back to the Malva. Why is that? So Shmuel gives the explanation, and the explanation is Savrei Achrayas Tar Soferhu, a statement that we hear time and again throughout Shas, and you're going to hear this often in the Bavas, and that is that when you do not see this clause of a loan document being a mortgaged loan document, that's just simply a mistake that was made by the sofer, but it should be there. Meaning, even if it's not there, even if it's not there, the assumption is that was agreed to by both parties. Because think about it from a lender standpoint. You have a choice of either lending money secured loan or unsecured loan. You tell me as a lender, what would you prefer? The obvious answer is, you obviously want every loan of yours to be a secured loan. So if there's an event where you lend money, you write a note to that, you should assume that that is part of the contract. And even if it's not, it's so well understood that every loan is going to be a secured loan. So therefore, you can assume that even if it's not there, that's a mistake on the part of the sofer. But truth of the matter is, both lender and borrower understood that this was the terms of the loan. That's the Chachamim's opinion. Now that we know that that's the Chachamim's opinion, now again, let's just go back to the Mishnah one more time for today, and just now we understand. So once it's a loan document, So then every loan document, according to the Chachamim, is a secured loan document, which means that the properties are mortgaged. Now we're always going to have to concern ourselves with the fact that there may be scheming going on. Because now what the Lova will do is, the Lova will pay back the loan, perhaps lose the loan document, have somebody else pick it up. Somebody will then just simply hand it back to the lender, and now they're going to go after one of the buyers of the property. Sorry, I defaulted on my loan. I can't pay it back. Okay. Amalei Rava bar Isi leRav Idi bar Avin. Umi Amar Shmuel Hachi. The Gemara says, now wait one second. You're telling me that according to Shmuel, even the absence of such a clause in a loan document is simply going to be ignored. Meaning its omission was unintended, and we're going to assume that every loan document is really a secure document. Is that true? V'amr Shmuel, the Gemara says, but I'm going to quote another statement that was made in the name of Shmuel, and that's the following. Shevach, Shefar, V'shibut Sarach Limlach. When a sofer writes up a document, the sofer has to be knowledgeable individual. Meaning he has to turn to the Malveh and say to the Malveh, now, I'm going to say Malveh, but as you'll see in just a moment, that's not accurate. But for our purposes right now, just to set ourselves up, he's going to turn to the Malveh, he's going to say, Shevach, I mean Lova in this case. He's going to turn to the Lova and he's going to say to the Lova, Shevach, Shvar, Vishibun. Let me ask you a question. When the properties are going to be taken away from the Lekuchos, are you going to be ready to reimburse them with the amount of the property, Shevach, any investment that he made into the property to improve the property, or let's just call it succinctly improvements, Shefar, it is. That in the event that the property is taken away, not only are you going to reimburse him, but you're going to reimburse him with the best of your properties, and Shibud, and basically security. Are you prepared to secure the note? So Tzarech Limlach, so all these things need to be asked. Meaning that the sofer needs to ask these questions because the sofer needs to know whether he should include that in the note or not include that in the note. Now, by virtue of the fact that the sofer is asking these questions, isn't it clear now that its omission was not unintended? By virtue of the fact that the sofer is asking these questions, it seems pretty clear that the reason why he's asking these questions is because if the answer is don't include it, so then he won't include it. And if the answer is included, then he will include it. And so, how can Shmuel then say, a couple lines earlier, that in his explanation of the Chachamim, which is the assumed halacha, that omission was unintended? How could it be unintended if the sofer is always expected to ask the question, do you want to make this a secured loan, yes or no? So, Leimaman da amaha lo amaha. So the Gemara says, well, maybe the one who quoted Shmuel's first statement doesn't agree with the one who quoted Shmuel's second statement. So the Gemara says, lo kasha. Meaning, as Rashi points out, later on Marayim, are quoting Shmuel, and maybe just a simple discrepancy of what Shmuel actually said. To which the Gemara says, "Lo kasha, kam b'sharava, de lo yavin ishtu zebichti, kam b'meko chamemka, david ishtu zavin arla yume." Gemara makes a very simple distinction, and this really resolves both statements of Shmuel. We're talking about a loan versus a sale. Let's start with a loan. I lend money. I'm not going to lend money unsecured. I'm only going to lend money knowing that I'm either going to get paid back by the Lova or by the property of the Lova. I'm only going to lend secure money. Okay, right. In other words, no hard lending, as they say in the modern parlance. So, and once there's a note that is connected to the loan, the note automatically includes a secured loan, and an omission of this clause in the contract is a mistake of the sofer. But we are going to assume, however, that every note is going to be a secure note. That is Shmuel's first statement. The second statement to Shmuel, where the sofer is asking questions, whether or not he should include or not include it, is talking about sale of property. I sell you land. Now, we can either do this one of two ways. Either I'm going to sell you land, and in the contract, in the sale contract, we're going to write that if the land is taken by you by any one of my creditors, or let's say I'm a Goslin, and I don't really, and I wasn't entitled to sell you this land. I wasn't the owner to sell you the land. But in the event that this property is taken away from you, I will reimburse you full value of the property. We could, and that's what's called selling a property with achrayus. Or, no, I'm going to sell you the land, but you should know you're buying the land on a risk. Because in the event that my creditors come and take the property away from you, I am not reimbursing you for that property. And that is up to the discretion of the buyer and the seller. Meaning they will come to the agreement prior to the sale, and the clause will either be included or not included based on the agreement that was agreed upon by the buyer and seller. And the Gemara says, and over here, unlike a loan, where we can't imagine a lender would lend money unsecured. When it comes to the sale of property, the Gemara is basically saying, I can imagine it, because, look, ultimately, I have the land right now. And now someone's coming to take the land away from me. I'll figure it out, right? I'll deal with the lender. I'll come to some sort of discounted agreement with the lender. I'll figure it out. But the Gemara says here, an omission of achrayus by a sale is not necessarily a mistake. It could have been calculated. Chattel for what? Chattel for?
Instead of the land, the ring.
No, the general assumption of the Gemara is that the only security goes on property. You can designate. I'm just now thinking aloud. Now we have the Gemara has something called napotiki, but even napotiki, generally speaking, goes on property. Napotiki is just a simple. It's what we do nowadays. In other words, we point to which land specifically is going to be used to secure this loan. And if I remember correctly, which hopefully I do, so apotekis can be applied towards an avid kanani also. I think animals also could be used against apoteki, for as an apoteki. I think so. That's going on my memory. Ki ahid avu abari zaven ilasu meachte. Gemara now tells a story where avu abari purchased property, a good property, from his sister. Okay, so a commercial transaction, a real estate transaction between brother and sister. And also Bachov Tafamine. Now, what he didn't know about his sister, or maybe he did, I take it back, he probably did, is that she had creditors. And so now along comes the creditors, and the creditors take the property away from him because the loan was a secured loan. Also coming to Marshmul, Amarle, Kasolach, Achrayos. So. Now, he goes to Shmuel because he wants a reimbursement from his sister. Meaning the creditor was perfectly within his right to go to come and take back the land. He had a lien against that property. Good for the creditor. Now, the brother takes his sister to court because he wants a reimbursement. And Shmuel's court. And Shmuel said, oh, okay, fine. On the contract of sale, was there a chrayus written into the contract? Was it negotiated beforehand that in the event that the creditor will come and take the land, that she would reimburse you? Amar lay low. So, he gave the honest answer, and that is no. We didn't put this into the clause of the contract. Amar lay im kain zil lishalma. Now, over here, by the way, when I first read the Gemara, I was confused because I thought what the Gemara meant is, okay, now go get paid. No. Zil lishalma over here means go in peace, meaning I will see you later. I'm really sorry, but... In other words, when you bought the land from your sister, it must have been agreed upon that you were buying it unprotected, no achrayus, and so therefore the land is taken away from you, and you do not get a reimbursement from your sister. That was simply not contracted in the property. So the guy who knows, who's heard, who's gone to shear by Shmuel himself says, wait one second, aren't you of the opinion that an omission is considered a mistake on the part of the sofer? So the Gemara says, "Amalei hanimila b'shar alvava b'shar mekachem emkalo." David nishes David arul yume, and his response was, "No, you heard shear, but you weren't listening carefully. I did say that. I said that by a loan. I did not say that by a sale of property. Period." And this really hammers home the distinction that we made that when Shmuel says that achrayus is tot sofer, that's by a loan document. But when it comes to sale, so then its omission is not a mistake. The omission is intentional. Amar Abaye. Okay. Next to halachas that we're going to see together in the Gemara is halachas that we saw back in Baba Kama. So this makes for a good review. Amar Abaye. I mean, we did this a while ago in Baba Kama, the beginning of Baba Kama. So this is Yudalit and Baba Mesia Daf Ches in Baba Kama. That is about 4 months ago. Okay? I'm Rabbi Reuven Shemachar said to Shimon, Ba'achrayos. Reuven sold the piece of property to Shimon and he sold it with a chrayos, meaning a contracted in the sale of the property that I will reimburse you in the event that my creditors come and take it away from you. Now, Uvabach of the Reuven, the Katar of Lamine, and lo and behold, because you knew this was going to happen, so the creditors of Reuven come and the creditors of Reuven now want to take the property away from Shimon. Dina hu dazel Reuven and Mishai Dina Mahadei. Let me go statement by statement. So now, Reuven, remember, Reuven's the one who sold the property. Reuven's the one who had the creditors. Reuven's creditors are coming to take away the property from the buyer. The buyer in this case is going to be Shimon. So now Reuven can get involved. Now, generally speaking, when we talk about litigation, only two people in litigation can get involved: the prosecutor and the defendant. A third party can simply not get involved. In fact, when a third party gets involved, so the litigant can simply say, I don't know who he is, but get him out of this court right now. In other words, he is not an invested party over here. He's not one of the litigants, and get him out. What the Gemara is teaching us, this is the Chiddush of Abaye, is that in this particular circumstance, Reuven is not a third party outsider. Reuven is an insider in this case. Even though the creditor is taking the land away from Shimon, Reuven can get involved. Let me read this one more time. Dina hu dazel Reuven and Mishai Dina Bahadei. Reuven can get involved. In other words, he can go into the courtroom and he can join Shimon in litigation against the creditor. And the creditor can't say to Reuven, please get out of here. This is not between me and you. This is between me and Shimon. Shimon is the one who bought the land. I'm simply exercising my lien. I'm simply taking my property away from me. You and Shimon are going to work it out at a different time. Reuven can say, no, I'm here and I can get involved. Damalei, demafakta mine, alai didi, hadar. So Reuven can say, and the argument over here is very simple and very strong, and that is, well, we know what's going to happen next. What's going to happen next is that once Shimon's property is taken away from him, when I sold him the property, we contracted achrayus. So in other words, I'm going to be on the hook for reimbursement. So you know that when the property is taken away from him, he's going to come after me. So you cannot call me a third party outsider. Now, just as an interesting note over here, generally speaking, what is Reuven's contribution going to be in the courtroom? Meaning, the case is going to be litigated. The judges are going to be there. If the judges can come to any sort of legal conclusion, so they will. And what exactly is Reuven going to contribute and what he's going to add? So if you...
Is he going to pay Shimon's debt?
So, right. So, see if you want, see Tosos over there. For a discussion of what exactly is going to be Reuven's contribution to this entire case. And by the way, Tosus, one of his suggestions, Tosus Divrei Maskol Dinohu, one of Tosus' suggestions is very simple, and that is Reuven's just a better talker. In other words, he can just simply go into court and articulate the case better than Shimon. And generally speaking, even if you can get a better talker, generally speaking, that's not allowed. Which, by the way, as a parenthetical note, not even so parenthetical, in a Jewish court, it certainly seems like our entire discussion, you can't get a lawyer to come and represent you. In other words, it will be your responsibility to present your case as best as you can, and it will be the judge's responsibility to flesh out as much of the details as they can. But over here, the only reason why we're allowing Reuven to come in is because he's not a third-party outsider. It's because he's an insider. Okay, Igad Amri, the very bottom of Yudal Amad Aleph, the Gemara says, and, oh, by the way, Afilu, Shaloba Achrayus Nami Damarlei, Lo Nichali, Delav L'Shimon, Tarama Salai. And according to another version of how this concludes, Reuven can come into court, and Reuven can litigate together with Shimon against the creditor, even if he wasn't, achrayus was not written into the sale contract. And even if he is not on the hook for reimbursing Shimon, he could still come into court. And the reason why is because he has the right to protect his reputation. Because what's going to end up happening is, if the creditor comes and takes the land away from Shimon, so Shimon's going to have not a financial gripe with Reuven, but the next time an opportunity comes up where, now I know, Lashon Hara, I understand, but the next time somebody asks him, oh, you had a business dealing with Reuven, how did that go? So Shimon's going to basically say, forget about it. Right? He sold me a property, told me that, don't worry, the creditor won't come. He convinced me not to write up the sale document with Achrayus. Lo and behold, the creditor came. Now again, this may not speak well of Shimon and his business acumen, but okay, all well and good, but Reuven realizes that once the property is going to be taken away from Shimon, and Shimon's not going to get reimbursed, so Reuven's reputation is going to be on the line, and according to the second version of Abaye, that's enough of an argument that Reuven can include himself in the litigation as well. The Amar Abaye. At the very bottom of Yudal Amar Aleph, another halacha by Abaye. Reuven sold property to Shimon, and again, with no achrayus, meaning that it will not be reimbursed in the event that it's taken away. And there were people who contested Reuven's legitimate ownership to the property. In other words, the Asikin are coming and saying, Reuven sold the property that simply had no right to sell, it wasn't his. So, just one second. Achelo hichzik ba, yachol lachzer bo. Mishi hichzik ba, eno yachol lachzer bo. So, in the event that he did a chazaka. So, if he did a proprietary act indicating that he, in fact, is the owner of the...
Who is he?
The buyer or seller. The buyer. If the buyer did a proprietary act indicating that he's in fact the owner, so then he cannot be chozer, then he cannot retract on the sale. Okay. And now that's interesting that you said that, and I'll tell you why in just a second. Well, again, you'll see why that becomes interesting in just a moment. However, but once he does a proprietary act, so I know yachalachzibo, so then he cannot retract on the sale. Okay, number of things to go over here. Lachzibo, the amarle chaisa de kantre savart vekabalt, and because the seller can say to the buyer, look, it's a bag of nuts. Obviously, that's an expression. Obviously, much more popular then than it is now. I haven't heard people say that recently. But a bag of nuts basically means it's... Well, actually, we have a similar expression. It's tangled, meaning it's complicated. And you knew when you buy it that you bought the field, right? Did you notice how much you bought the field for, right? And you researched it, and you knew that it was going to be a little bit complicated, this property. And so you did a proprietary act indicating that you were going to be the owner of the property, and at this point in time now, it's yours with all of its complications. Now, just as a couple of interesting notes over here. Rashi over here says that there was no money handed for the property, and I know why Rashi does that. Because if money was handed for the property, the money itself becomes a kinyan. It becomes an actual act of acquisition. So Rashi over here says money hasn't been given yet. Rashi over here describes the proprietary act. Well, the Gemara says, I should say. Let's go read a little bit more in the Gemara. At what point in time does it become a chazaka? Michidayish a mitzra. When he goes ahead and he goes along the border. Third line down in Rashi. Misakin gvule hasade umagbiyam. Well, basically what the buyer does is he goes around the field, around the border of the field, and he basically lifts, he raises the area around the field, indicating, marking the borders of the property. This is considered a proprietary act in which now the buyer has legally purchased the field. It's not a mekachtaus, meaning...
If it wasn't the first guy to sell, how could it be a kinyan on that?
It was just to sell. What is happening now is that it's being contested. Meaning it wasn't proven that it didn't belong to him. It was simply being contested. Now, I will agree with you that if all this was undisclosed at the time of the sale and only comes up later point in time, so then it sounds like from the Gemara that may fall under the category of Mekachtos. If you look carefully at the Gemara, the way the Gemara phrases the argument, the Gemara says, Amar lei chayse de katri savart vikabalt. Meaning, when I sold you the property, you knew that it was a bag of nuts. Meaning, you knew that there was going to be some complication over here in this property. And you accepted that as part of the deal. And, now we'll go one step further, meaning what the Gemara said. And you did a proprietary act indicating that you, in fact, are going to be the owner and accept the complication. Under such circumstances, the land now belongs to you. And the Gemara says, once again, over here, we're going to go one step further, and that is that even if the land was sold by Achrayus, which means that when Reuven sold the land to Shimon, and now it comes into question whether or not Reuven was the rightful owner of the land, and even if there is going to be a promised reimbursement if the land is taken away from Shimon, so still, once Shimon does a proprietary act to the land, Shimon is going to be the rightful owner of the land. Now, from Shimon's standpoint, once the land is taken away, so then he is going to get reimbursed for the land. So maybe you could say that Shimon at that point in time can back out even after he's done a proprietary act. To which the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Even with Achrayus, Amar Lei, Ach Ve Tarfech Vasham Lach. Here,
the police are normally common in the boardroom, we're talking today, we're 105. Again, boys who normally common in the boardroom, we're talking today, and we're 105.
The Malva will say to the Lova, sorry, let me do that again, let me do that better. The seller will say to the buyer, look, right, even if the land is, it's complicated, and you knew the land was complicated, but I'll tell you this, right, you did a proprietary act, you are now going to own it. Now, it's true, I did promise I'm going to reimburse you for that property, but I'll tell you what, when the property is taken away from you, when you go to court, when the court writes you a shtar tirfa, shtar taref, which allows you then to collect a reimbursement from me, then and only then am I going to pay you back. Okay. We'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up. Itmar on the top of Yad Amud Beis. Just quickly to recap. Today we finish up the discussion of finding a lost archov in the street. Do you return to the malva? The answer is no. I mean, after the lengthy discussion, the answer is no. You don't return it back to the malva. We're worried about kanunya. We're worried about scheming. We're worried about piron. We're worried about the lova having paid back the document. We're worried about the lukuchos. We're looking to protect the lukuchos. So the answer is we do not hand it back to the malva. The even when the lova admits that the loan was paid back. This is Rav Yochanan's understanding of the Mishnah. This is Abraisa's understanding of the Mishnah. This seems to be the conclusion of the Gemara. Even if the loan didn't have the clause of secured property securing, meaning mortgage, even though that's true, there's still going to be a secured note. Why? Because Shmuel says that Achrayus tot sofrim. An omission in a loan document is a mistake on the sofer, but of course a lender lent it with a security. And then contrast that with a sale document. A sale document, an omission was not a mistake. In fact, Shmuel had another statement that when a sofer writes up a sale document, he needs to clarify beforehand whether or not there is going to be a reimbursement in the event that the land is taken away. People will buy land for short periods of time, and so therefore an omission there is not a mistake. And then we went over a number of halachas regarding what would happen in the event that land is taken away from the lekuchos by the creditor. Can the seller of the land slash the borrower of the loan, can he get involved in the case? And the answer of the Gemara is yes, he can, because either he's got money at stake or his reputation at stake.